It's Byline on WFPL. I'm Gabe Bullard. I'm here now with actor Stephen Tobolowsky. Thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, Gabe.
And you're in town to read from your new memoir, The Dangerous Animals Club, but I feel like I've heard a lot of interviews with you recently, and they always sort of follow the same format in the introduction of you may not recognize his name, but if you've seen any of the 200-some movies or TV shows, then they know your face. But does it ever wear on you to be known as the guy people don't know they know?
No, it's always kind of amusing. I remember I was in Aspen, Colorado, and we were promoting the movie then, Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party, which is kind of where the podcast of the Tobolowsky Files kind of came from. Those were all true stories from my life, like the podcast. And the director of that movie, Robert Brinkman, thought it was amusing that like nobody knew who I was. So we went on the street to interview people on the street to see if they knew who Stephen Tobolowsky was. And it was interesting because everybody knew who I was and almost no one was correct. There was one guy, the first guy we asked, he said, oh, I know who Stephen Tobolowsky is. He's read about him today in the paper. He's a serial killer. He was just released from prison in Denver, and there's a huge protest at Town Hall. Yeah, I know who the guy is. Another person said, oh, it's the real name of a popular porn star, Rick Hot Rod Rocket. And then there was one woman who was exquisite, and she said, he is a scientist who's come up with something different about time. And you know, sometimes you hear something from a stranger, and it kind of turns your head around like the girl in The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's one I'm keeping. I want to be that. And I tried to incorporate that in my stories.
Well, how many movies have you been in?
Oh, no. Okay. It's hard to count them. The ones that I still have active memory of, I think I counted, and it's been like over probably 120 movies and probably 200 some odd television shows.
Well, I looked this up. I wanted to see who has been in the most movies. And Christopher Lee, who's in, he's in a lot of trilogies as well, which ups his count, I think. He's gotten those recurring character roles. He's been in 275, but he has a 30-year head start on you.
Yeah, well, Christopher Lee, yeah, but he's still working, or did he pass away? Is he still
He's still
us?
Working, yeah.
Oh, man, we got to stop that man. You got to stop him. But he was so great in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was so great. Christopher Lee was one of my early icons when I was going to the movie theaters on Saturday matinees and watching those Hammer horror films. You had to love Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Yeah, when you play character roles, you do have the opportunity to be in lots of different films because there's always a place where they need either an expert in geology or a serial killer, you know, like in Glimmer Man. So there's always an opportunity to get that count up high.
Is this what you imagined that your career would be when you started appearing in movies? I know you have a history in the theater, and you mentioned in Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party, you're almost Ronald McDonald, but now you're now you have this this career of these character parts.
No, first of all, when I was very little, I thought that the whole idea of being an actor meant that you got to hang out with monsters. I thought the Wolfman and Godzilla were real, and that actors really got to sit down and talk with them and be close to them. And then later I thought it meant being an actor meant you would have adventure in your life and you would fly in space and go on battleships and ride horses in the Old West. It was only later, I guess when I was in college, I thought being an actor meant I'm going to be on Broadway and do serious drama. You know, the Shakespeare and the Shaw and the Ibsen. I did not know it would be playing Buckcrack Plumber and You May Not Kiss the Bride. I did not know it was going to involve some of the roles that, in fact, you know, I don't think I've ever played Shakespeare for real. I don't think I ever have after all that study. I know doing Deadwood, all the work I did on Shakespeare helped get through those scripts. But no, I never imagined I'd be doing what I'm doing now.
There wasn't a Buckcrack Plumber in Much Ado About Nothing?
They didn't. Ye Buckcrack Plumber, I think they called him. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like it might be perfect for you. You have this new book, The Dangerous Animals Club, and I was looking at a preview video of it online, the internet video to promote the book, and you say that it's not a showbiz book.
No.
But that might be what people, well, you do tell a lot of stories, but you have been in show business for so long.
I do tell some showbiz stories in there, and I know, and they're funny showbiz stories in there, but I have this feeling that people always think movie stories are going to be funnier or more important than they really are. You realize after you tell them it's kind of a niche kind of a story. And so I don't like to tell showbiz stories unless there's a broader context to them that people can relate to. And so there are plenty of funny showbiz stories in Dangerous Animals Club, but I try to cast them in a bigger palette of like people dealing with disaster, people dealing with hopelessness or whatever. That's my kind of personal feeling.
You have for so long been telling these stories. There's the podcast, the upcoming radio program as well, and the movie Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party. How do you know whenever you're experiencing something, or do you know when it's happening, that it will be a story you'll be able to tell later?
No, it's funny because there's always a difference, I say in my head, between an event and a story. For example, I'll give you just a quick example. When my wife called me up to tell me she was pregnant, she was working in Alaska. I was in Memphis. And she called me up at dawn, and I knew my male brain alarm went off saying, as I adjusted for time zone changes, this woman is calling me in the middle of the night. This is a bad phone call. And when she called me to tell me she was pregnant, I, of course, started crying. I was so excited, but I had to tell someone. And it became an event that day as I tried to tell the cleaning lady and the bartender and eventually the stuntman of the movie that I was going to be a new father. Now, that is an event, but it became a story 14 years later when Ann and I were in a restaurant having sushi and I feel a tap on my shoulder and it was the stuntman of the movie. And he said, I was walking down the street. I've just lost my firstborn. And I had to tell someone, and I saw you sitting in here, and I knew you would understand. Because once you've lost a child, your life will never be the same. Then it became a story. So a lot of times life informs. Now, that's one reason, Gabe, why I tried to tell true stories. Because if you tell a true story, they have a chance to grow and to change and to modulate. That's my own personal theory.
Do you ever go out hoping that something you're doing will make fodder for a story later on?
No. I think it's a little like the uncertainty principle. Like the more you look for a story to happen or to occur with you, the less likelihood there is something interesting will happen. I think it's a matter of something happens to you and then you recognize, oh my gosh, this is really extraordinary. And then you begin to see the pieces around it. I know biblical archaeologists have looked at the Bible, and they've noted that probably the first part of the Bible that was written was actually Leviticus and not Genesis. You know, that was the first part of the Bible that was written, and then they went back and wrote Exodus, like how did we get to this place in the desert? And then later they said, you know, and let's go back and do some creation stories. So that kind of like a nuclear explosion happens with a story. An event happens in your life, and then slowly you start seeing the picture around it, and you start seeing the broader context, and you go like, oh my goodness, this is kind of a life-changing event for me. I had no idea when I was living through it.
How do you go about presenting a story that you may tell someone, say at a party, or that you may be telling on the podcast, to putting it together and putting it in the book?
It's a long process in that I kind of tell myself the story and I have one part of my brain that's writing the story, like in the book, and then another part of my brain says, you know, you should add this section. Like I just added that Bible thing. I had no idea where that came from. So a different part of my brain says, you know, this thing, other thing relates to this in some way. You should include this in your story. So in writing the stories of the Dangerous Animals Club, I tried to write the stories the way we perceive time. You know, if we're sitting in this room, we always think of time as past, present, and future. But when people experience time, they experience it in a completely different way. They go all over. They zip back to the past. They think forward to the future. They're almost never in the present. And I want my stories and also the construction of Dangerous Animals Club to kind of work the same way the human mind does. So the reader ends up putting the pieces together like they would a memory.
All right. Stephen Tobolowsky, his new book is The Dangerous Animals Club. He'll be reading from it tonight at 7:30 at the Baumart Theater in the Kentucky Center. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's Byline on WFPL.